The body of 34-year-old Nicole Brown Simpson, ex-wife of O.J. Simpson, was found.
Really believe Kurt Cobain is dead.
Millions of people mourned the tragic death of John Lennon today.
Struggles to come to terms with the death of Princess Diana. Waiting for word.
Hi, welcome to Fame and Misfortune.
I'm hoping we got it right now.
Yep, this is at least our fifth take of this.
At least, and I haven't lost any hair
yet. Not yet. Also, that doesn't include the test recordings.
Oh my god.
Okay, well, first off, we wanted to say thanks for listening, guys. We had about 30 listeners or so last week, and we appreciate all of you.
Yeah, we're only like 5,000 something in the ranks of podcasting.
Yeah, we're moving on up,
so,
you guys.
You know, give two girls a microphone and
here we go.
Change the
you
world.
Get a bunch of bullshit. Yes. That's what you get.
So, we're out here in the dark on my patio,
which is terrifying for the record. Not the patio, it's the yard behind it, like all the land. And it feels like Jason is going to come on up in here with a machete at any minute.
It'd really just be a cow, but
which I love for
maybe.
The
So I guess we can kind of cut out all the bullshit because this is our like 100th attempt to do this.
Yep, and so, all of it was good. You missed all the good stuff. Should have been here.
Yeah, except it was all echoey and
it was echoey
and we couldn't get it right. But we're
so
learning.
You know what? You get quality shit, but you don't get all the fun shit. So deal with it, basically. At this point.
But. Aaron is our big winner chicken dinner for the first storytelling.
Our first storytelling, the real format of our podcast.
So here we go.
Yeah, here we go. So this one's about somebody that you've probably heard of, Robert Durst, who is from a very, very prominent family in New York, as in up there with the Rockefellers, kind of rich. They, Douglas Durst, the second child, now owns the Durst Foundation, or he's the head of it, and he has property rights to the Freedom Tower, which took place of the Twin Towers that were knocked down in 9/11. So they're really up there, kind of important people. From an early age, he was born in 1943, the oldest of four, two brothers and one sister, and from an early age he kind of had a lot of tragedy in his life. When he was seven, his mom fell from the roof of the family's home.
Quote-unquote fell.
Quote-unquote fell. He was seven. The official ruling was that she was disoriented from medication, but pretty much everybody knew that it was his suicide. And Robert actually was there to witness the whole thing. His father saw their mother on the roof and I guess took Robert over to the window and was like, hey, look at mommy. She's on the roof. Wave at her.
So disturbing.
Right. And she fell. Robert saw the whole thing. Her head split open on the concrete. It was graphic and terrible. But Robert was there to witness the whole thing. And now we think that, Seymour, his father, was planning or hoping that if Bernice, his mother, saw Robert standing in the window, that she wouldn't jump. Of course, now we know that was not the case. So she fell. It was very traumatic. And at the funeral, he kind of lost his mind. And tried to rip the casket out of the ground when the maid said, go say goodbye to your mother, and pointed to the casket. Because he didn't understand that his mother was in there. He thought she was just sleeping. It wasn't a big deal.
Right.
He's a 7-year-old who doesn't understand the concept of death. So it was just really a huge problem. And he caused a really big scene at the funeral. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, at that point in time, having four kids, very overwhelming, a lot of social responsibilities.
Right, and, I mean, his dad clearly wasn't Father of the Year anyway.
Well, right, and postpartum's a real deal,
right.
And it's very, and I can only imagine if he was the oldest and seven of four, you know. That's,
right, how it affected the younger ones,
yes,
too.
Yes, and, you know, her and everything else, so.
So basically, he caused this massive, gigantic scene at the funeral, and his father, Seymour, took it as a big embarrassment. He thought it kind of blemished the name of the family, I guess, and he was just not having it. He was all, no son of mine is gonna, you know, cause problems in the news or whatever, because, I don't know, he's a douchebag. But I guess that kind of pays tribute to the kind of stress that young rich people are put under.
Yeah, definitely.
So after that, the father was, and you have to remember this was, you know, the 50s now, so he was very absent. He was doing business stuff and wasn't there for his kids at all, so Robert kind of grew up really on his own. He graduated high school and moved to Pennsylvania to study business and economics. Graduated from Lee University in 1965 and then went to a doctoral program at UCLA so that he can go into the family business and kind of run the foundation. Being the eldest, it's his quote-unquote birthright. In 1969, he dropped out of college to come home and work on the family business because that's what his father wanted. And then in 1971, he met Kathleen McCormack, Kathy, whose family lived in a building that was owned by their foundation. According to close friends and family, Kathy was smitten. Her brother, even in one of the interviews, says that he came on like Prince Charming and she was Cinderella. Like, it was a very whirlwind kind of romance.
I don't think I appreciate that reference, but I will.
I mean, I'll write a letter. I guess
I agree. No, it's okay. It's all right.
You take this one and just, like, move past it at some point.
I think I can get over it.
I believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 dates in, and this is in the 70s, Robert invites Kathy to move in with him after 2 dates.
2 dates?
Uh-huh. And wow. She accepts, which is the wildest thing.
I mean, but if... Okay. Probably.
I mean, to be fair, it is the 70s, so things were, like, different then. But I feel like they weren't 2 dates different.
Well, you know, there's no social media back then, so you can't, like, you just kind of had to take, like, yeah, and you just had to go with it and
got it.
Go by what you knew already, so, you know, I think it's okay.
So the two moved to Vermont together in 1972, and they open a health food store called All Good Things, which is also...
Must come to an end?
Yeah, I guess so. Which is also the name of the movie that Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst are in. It's called All Good Things.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's not really an indie film, but it feels like it should be an indie film.
Okay, is this the one you were telling me I should watch? Okay.
No, the one I'm telling you. Well, that's the one I wanted you to watch, but that was before I watched it.
Oh, okay.
And now I watched it, and it's then not worth it.
Not good. Okay, so nobody watch it.
It's not a recommendation. But it's not really, like, it's not going to pull you in. It's not that interesting. I recommend the Jinx series, which, ironically, is by the same director and is very good. Anywho.
We all grow up.
Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They open a health food store called All Good Things in Vermont. Soon after, they sell the store and return to, reluctantly, quote unquote, I wrote here, to New York and the Durst organization. Kathy was not having it. She didn't want to go back to the city. She loved their life in Vermont. And Robert did too, but, you know, he's the oldest son, so he's kind of got to bite the bullet and do it anyway.
Sure.
So, they marry in 1973, and while they're living in New York, Kathy, all of her family lives there, so she takes him over to her family's house all the time to, you know, do dinners and whatever, help out with cleaning or anything, you know, whatever.
Right.
So they go over to the family's house a lot, and Robert is just super awkward at all of these family interactions. Like, he doesn't know how to function in a family entity at all, which I guess makes sense, but it makes Kathy really, really unhappy, and, like it would be to the point where they would walk in, Mom would ask about his day and say, you know, did you read this article or whatever, and he would just answer with very curt one word, like, no, yes, and then not respond to anything at all.
That's very weird.
Right. So, which makes me think that maybe he lacked empathy in that situation, that he didn't understand why people felt the need to have conversation.
Well, I mean, I think we all know he lacks empathy based on his track record.
Right.
But I don't blame Kathy for being mad
weirded out
and uncomfortable, and you know,
like, you should be able to have a conversation with people. Like, small talk is small talk. I hate it, don't get me wrong.
Sure. I think we all do.
Yeah.
Nobody likes it.
It's doable. It's not, nobody finds it hard to do, really.
I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, sometimes it feels forced.
Yeah.
Amongst people, you know, yeah. when you're just like, what else can I come up with to talk to this person yeah, okay. about? Like,
right.
we both have nowhere to go. Maybe it's someone you know and you're standing in line and you're like, we're trapped.
Right. And maybe
like,
that's why you got along in New York so well.
Yeah, probably, because I appreciate
it. Nobody likes to talk to anyone.
No, nobody likes to talk to anybody there, and I appreciate it, because then I could just talk to who I wanted to talk to when I wanted to talk to somebody, and usually it was about something that we were doing in class or something.
So that could be, and I was thinking that could be a part of it, too, but, I mean, if they live in New York, they're New York people, so...
I guess.
I don't know. That's weird.
I mean, but there's still, don't get me wrong, families are families, and, you know, it's different than, like... I'm sure if I saw her family on the street in New York, they would not want to have a conversation with me.
Right, absolutely. But
in their own home at a dinner or something.
It should be easy. You know, yeah. I just can't imagine sitting there with somebody for an entire dinner and trying to ask them, you know, about their day or about their company or their family or, mm-hmm. you know, what's your favorite color? And they're just like, it was okay. My family's terrible. My company's okay.
I hate color.
I hate color. Yeah, exactly.
I like black. The absence of color.
Void by Armani. Anywho. that was a Parks and Rec reference, and if you get it, high five.
If you know, then you know.
If you know, you know. Okay, so basically, really awkward interactions with family, and it causes like huge fights between the two of them. There's actually a scene in the All Good Things movie where they're screaming at each other in a car because he just can't have a normal conversation. He can't have a dinner with his family, and it's ridiculous. So the odd behavior would start arguments between the two. Robert was seemingly unable to function in a typical family dynamic and refused to discuss it at all. So he was not he was kind of following in his father's footsteps at this point, where take it or leave it kind of situation. I'm not going to talk about it. It is what it is.
Right.
Let's see how many cliches we can fit into this sentence.
Let's see.
This, amongst other things, put massive strain on their marriage, so that just kind of really started to, not only that, but a lot of other things, just tiny little things that Robert wouldn't talk about, his feelings, he didn't want to discuss the future, or things like that, would really, really kind of starting to pull them apart.
Right.
at some point, and I know I wrote it somewhere in here, but I don't know where I put it, he also did not want children at all. 100% was not having it. Kathy did, and this is something that they didn't discuss after their
second date.
Yeah, moving in.
Well, because you know, life teaches us that we don't talk about those things on the first
or second
date. It's
important to discuss these things.
It is, though.
So she wanted kids. He didn't. She got pregnant. He blamed her because it was her job. She's the one who's supposed to be taking the birth control.
I'm sorry. What?
Uh huh. Yeah. Don't forget. It's all her fault. She's the only one. She, you know, divine. Mm-hmm. Fucking intervention, you know.
Whatever.
Anywho.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets knocked up, and he's like, this isn't happening. You're going to have an abortion. Period. And she's like, what? Excuse me? That's ridiculous. And so, at some point, he reminds her that she, at one point, agreed that if ever they got pregnant, that she would have an abortion. And he literally forces her to a clinic to have an abortion.
I'm sorry, did he brainwash her into thinking, wait, I know we don't think brainwash is, like, a thing, but did he, like, create this elaborate, thing to
maybe
make her...
I feel like maybe he was gaslighting her.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for, gaslight.
Yeah. Which is where you, like, put people down and use all kinds of manipulative tactics to...
Right, and then you manipulate them into thinking they did something that they did not, like,
and it's their fault
do or say.
Yeah, exactly, correct. So I think between that and the whole he's very rich and powerful and you don't want to mess with him kind of guy.
Right.
She went and got the abortion and did it and was just trying to save their marriage, I think, at that point. That caused even more strain in the marriage, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And Kathy wasn't... Oh, the cows are peeking through the fence. I love you, cows.
They're just really nosy.
They're so beautiful, you guys. You should be here. There's a sunset and cows. Ugh, you'd love it. Okay. So, Kathy is, she's never been the kind of sit quietly kind of woman. Also, she's growing up in the 70s, or she's, you know, a young adult in the 70s, so she's very burn your bras. Free. Fuck Vietnam. Let's live our lives. Right. Don't try to tell me I have to wear a skirt because I'm going to wear whatever the fuck I want. Kind of chick.
Wait, they weren't wearing pants by then? Mm-hmm.
No, in the 70s, if you were young and you still lived in your parents' houses, a lot of the times you had to wear skirts. It's a big deal. Like, huge situation. I think Mary Tyler Moore was the first person who wore
I did not see that on that 70s show. I just want to make that clear.
Well, okay, yes, but not every family was like that. Like, a lot, like, my aunt, I guess maybe because we're from the South, and it's very
oh, well, that's a whole different, whatever. Like, ballgame.
So, you know, the Southern Baptist kind of situation. Mm-hmm. She literally was not allowed to wear a skirt until she left home, or wasn't allowed to wear anything other than a skirt until she left home. It was just a thing, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Anywho, she was her own person, so shout out to you, Kathy, for killing it. You're great. Paved the way for all these other ladies.
Wear all the pants.
Yeah, wear those pants.
Mm-hmm.
Those high-waisted bell-bottom pants.
Oh, my gosh, and they're coming back, and I wish I was tall enough to wear a pair. But I'm not.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. So she was kind of her own woman, so she wasn't putting up with it, basically. So by 1980, Robert had had enough of her, defiance, I guess, and there was a lot of abuse that had been happening in the relationship, both physical and mental,
mm-hmm.
On Robert's side, of course. And basically, Kathy left. She literally was like, I can't take it anymore. She was battered and done. So she left and went and stayed with friends.
Good for her.
Yeah, very proud of her. And she had hired a divorce lawyer at this point. And so she stayed there for a long time, and Robert would call regularly to, you know, tell her, everything's fine, I didn't mean it, just come home, I love you, you don't need a lawyer, all this stuff.
I am rolling my eyes so yeah, hard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest eye roll I've ever seen. Very
Thank you.
Intense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she would answer the calls, and talk to him because she was literally afraid of this man. And then after the calls, her friend would say that she seemed very, very upset, like extremely shaken by the calls. She even made the comment once, if anything happens to me, promise you'll look into it. I'm scared of Robert. This is Kathy making that statement to a friend.
Interesting.
Yeah. and then she goes to see him in person. And this is now we've fast forwarded to January 31st, 1982, she had gone to see him the night before, so January 30th. She went to see him at their lake house. Robert already knew about the divorce lawyer and everything, and it's kind of in its final stages at this point. And she was living separately from him as a medical student. She was now a fourth-year medical student, so she's, like, going to be a doctor, going okay. to kick ass, breaking that glass ceiling.
Yes, please.
And so she goes to see Robert. And then the next morning, or that night, supposedly the doorman sees her and lets her into the apartment building. She goes up to her apartment, and then the next morning she calls the medical school saying, I'm sick, I won't be there. But then that's the last anybody hears from her at all.
So yeah. I'm guessing she wasn't sick.
Right. Here's the thing, though. The doorman saw her go in, so if something had happened to her while she was visiting Robert that night on the 30th, how did somebody see her the day after? And how did she call in to school?
Well, he could have seen her, I guess. I mean, that is a big mystery. I mean, that is interesting.
Well, I have a theory on it.
Okay.
I have a theory. And well, I feel like it's a pretty solid one. Like, I don't see any holes in it, so
he could have been bought off.
That's true. He could have been paid off, right?
You need some of your wine or water.
I do.
You have.
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Wine break.
Pause for wine. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm curious to know your theory. But I mean, ultimately, the doorman could have been lying, and he could have made any girl call the school.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I mean, it's the 70s. It's not like you have to show your social security card, birth certificate,
right,
and everything else like
also,
you do now.
Also, this is a billionaire. So,
right.
I mean, and in the 70s, a billionaire is a big deal.
Right. And the doorman at the time could be working for
one of his buildings.
Right.
So, anywho, that's the last she's seen. Robert's recount of this, the night that they spent together, is that they had gone grocery shopping the morning before. Kathy took their Mercedes, they were sharing a car, to see a friend before returning. And this is the friend that she says, if anything happens, investigate Robert. So she goes to see this friend before returning to the South Salem home around 7:30 p.m. Kathy had been drinking but was not drunk. The two supposedly ate dinner before Robert and Kathy got into an argument. And Kathy insisted that Robert drive her to the Katona train station to go back to the city. Robert says that he watched Kathy board the train on the way back to the city. He then returned back to the cottage in South Salem alone and had a drink with a neighbor, before calling Kathy from a payphone, which is weird. You go home, you have a drink with a neighbor, you call Kathy, your wife, from a payphone when you have a home phone in your home.
That is very weird.
Right, yes. So, I mean, it's the 70s. It's not like this is 1904 where there aren't phones regularly accessible.
Sure. And he's a billionaire.
He's a billionaire. He can afford it. Every kind of phone there is.
He probably already has a cell phone.
Exactly. So, you know. At their New York City apartment, the doorman confirmed that Kathy safely made it up to their 53rd floor penthouse, which, okay. The next morning. That's a far fall. Also, that divorce must have not only A, cost a fortune, but B, would have given her so much money.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know the situation on their prenup agreement, if they had one, if those were a thing then or not. But I agree that it probably would have cost him a lot. Or perhaps she just wanted to run away, because it sounds to me that she doesn't really care for that kind of life.
Exactly.
Anyway, because they had ran away at the beginning to Vermont and everything was so, like,
happy and peaceful. Yes. And,
and now it's all, like, the glitz and the glamour and the 53rd floor penthouse. I mean, some people don't want
that. And so this is where the next morning she called the dean of the school saying she wasn't feeling well and she wasn't going to make it to class. A couple days pass and Robert calls Kathy's brother and asks if he's seen her. Her brother says he hasn't, and later reports that it was, quote, an odd conversation, which I get. I mean, why would you, you're married to her, why would you call her brother? You know what I mean? There's no reason for him to know more than you.
Well, I mean, if she was trying to be a runaway.
Guess that makes sense, yeah.
Yes, but it's also to cover your tracks. I mean, think about it. If you've done something to somebody, you need to make sure you tell everybody else. You don't know where that person is.
Exactly.
I've been watching Cold Justice lately.
Ooh, I love it. I just started it.
Okay. So good. It's a great show. Season 2 is amazing. And more often than not, these people that they end up, you know, getting for these murders and cases are, it's things like that where they've set up this whole situation of, nope, I was doing this, and made sure they called that person, the other person, and been like, hey,
are you talking about the Walmart one?
I mean, any of that.
That Walmart one was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot on there that are very sad and very hard sometimes to get through, and...
Do you know I was watching Forensic Files?
Okay, yep.
And I forget her name. The main prosecutor, the really southern one from Texas...
Kelly Siegler. Yes, love her.
She was on Forensic Files as Yeah, as like a reference person. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
It was great.
Oh man, I love her. Yeah. She's great.
She's amazing.
But yeah, you know, you just make sure you're calling everybody and be like, oh, have you seen Erin?
Right, exactly. Like, make it look like you're interested.
Yes. And that you're innocent because you don't know. So if you don't know, if I don't know where you are, Erin, how can I have done anything to you, because I don't know where you are.
Good call. Yeah.
I don't know where you are.
That's a very smart move.
And nobody can say I did, because I've already called.
Take notes, serial killers, if you're listening.
Okay, no, first of all.
Okay, but here's how you don't get caught.
No,
that's not our advice. No, here's how you definitely get caught. Yeah. Because, I mean, instantly the first suspects are always the husband, the wife, the...
The husband always did it.
The friends, the spouse, the
children. No matter who actually committed... The crime, the husband's always involved.
I mean, can I tell you my favorite plot twist? Crime scene plot twist?
Sure.
It's not a real one. It's fiction, but it's still my favorite.
Okay.
So, you know in Legally Blonde?
Yeah.
the prom girl or the perm girl?
Yes.
Yes. Oh my god. That's my favorite plot twist.
Well, my favorite real one that stands out as funny but not funny. Obviously, it's a serious situation, and nothing actually happened, so it makes it okay, but it happened in Florida.
Okay.
The woman who wanted her husband murdered and hired somebody, a former cop, to do it, like, because, so the husband, like, had a feeling, or, like, something happened. I can't remember the exact story. Sorry, everybody, but he, like, knew she was coming after him and went to the cops about it, and they sent an undercover cop to talk to her. So they ended up setting up that he was actually murdered.
Wow.
And that he did die. Like, they set up a crime scene at the house, made it look like he was dead, had her roll up, and she starts, like,
freaking
bawling,
out,
crying, and everything. And then it was like, just kidding, here he is. Like, while like she's getting, punked, like,
Ashton, like, Kutcher pops out of the closet.
So, like, she's in, like, the room, like, giving a statement and stuff. And then they're like, no, just kidding, he's alive. And actually, we know you tried to have him murdered.
Oh, so good. Yeah. That's so amazing.
Mm-hmm, that's
okay, that's
my
way better than that, the perm girl.
Okay, well, it wasn't but that to was, be better, but
I
it
mean,
was
their
just,
story was, like, pretty spot on until she's like, I was in the shower.
Yeah.
And Elwood's is all like, any Cosmo girl knows.
That's right.
So good.
See, blondes can be lawyers, too.
You can do it. I believe in you.
I tried.
Did you?
I did. Sort of, yes. I did start, like, paralegal school.
Oh,
and
wow.
I only made it, like, 3 days in because
it's
I...
It's so much work.
Well, yeah, yes, it is a lot. But I had no... I was, like, thrown into, like, a trust and wills and estates class, and I, like, had no reference to how to do anything prior, how to write up assignments properly, like, I was a lawyer, and I got my, like, first assignment, and I was like, I can't. I literally, I just don't have it in me in the time.
Yep.
This
is me.
Because I was working, like,
ever.
You know, my standard, like, 9 to 5, 40-hour week job,
and
that was already...
to go to school.
Yes, and I was just like, I mean... People do it all
right,
the time.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't make it any less difficult.
No, and I just had no clue what I was lost. And I would have loved to have learned more and would still like to learn so much more, but I was just way in over my head because I was no Elle Woods. I had not. I was not.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't going to work.
Well, I commend your attempt.
Thank
very
you.
Good. Very
Thank
good.
You.
Very good try.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it.
Okay, so a couple days pass. Robert calls Kathy's brother and asks if he's seen her. He says no. On February 5th, 1982, Robert reports Kathy's disappearance to the police. Ding, ding, ding. Yet another red flag.
Wait, that's how many days later?
February 5th from January 30th.
Okay.
So, at least a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is giving me Casey Anthony vibes.
Okay, we have to go over that case.
Okay.
Because I never really read it in depth into it, so.
Oh, I watched the whole...
Okay, so you're gonna...
I watched the whole hearing, everything, every day.
Here's a little sneak preview.
Me and my sister.
Stephanie is gonna be doing a Kathy and Nancy...
Kathy Anthony
case at some point.
She doesn't really deserve attention, but it is an interesting case.
I mean, it's
I don't
also...
like to give her attention, but I think it's very...
Well, we don't have to hashtag Casey Anthony.
Well, no, but... No, and you shouldn't, but... It is very interesting.
Right.
So many holes in the story, and it just makes me, it's, I think, our generation's OJ.
Oh, probably, yes.
Because
that's
after,
like a big deal, though. I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like our generation's OJ is probably Chris Brown, if we're being real about it.
Yeah,
I mean,
but he hasn't killed anybody yet.
Yes.
So
he's on his fucking way, though. Like,
I mean, maybe
he'll get there.
He had a daughter. Maybe he's changed. I mean, I'm not saying he's not, like, an abuser by any means.
He's been arrested for domestic violence, like, 4 times now.
Yeah, he should be in jail.
Uh-huh.
He should be in jail.
Yes.
But as far as, like, a murder case and how you see all the evidence.
Yeah.
And there's so many holes in the story.
Conviction.
Right. And, like, so is anybody going to say who did it?
Right.
Like, are we ever going to find out? Is that little girl just, nobody cares?
Dead for no reason?
Yeah. Like, is it a cold case? What are we doing and why?
I thought it was, I mean, once it's done, it's done. Once she's tried, there's nothing else they can do.
For her, no, because of double jeopardy.
Right.
But, you know, But then why haven't we found out who did do it?
That's true.
If it wasn't her...
There should still be an investigation taking place. Got it.
And a conviction of some sort, because someone who knew that little girl, more than likely, did...
Yeah, the grandparents or whatever.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, sorry, sidetracked. Keep moving with Robert Durst.
Robert Durst. Mm-hmm. On February 5th, 1 week later, reports Kathy's disappearance to the police. Her friends are immediately suspicious and bombard... These girls are... You want them in your corner. They kick ass.
Okay.
Kathy's friends are amazing. A lot of them are still alive, too, and I appreciate all of you. So, they're immediately suspicious, and they bombard NYPD with stories of abuse and the controlling nature of their relationship. They individually, on their own time, without getting paid, without any help from investigators, because at this point, investigators think that she's just run away.
Sure.
They don't really pay much attention to it. He's a billionaire. Why would she want to leave him? Yes, but she was getting abused, and, you know, he made her have an abortion, and so she runs away, according to the NYPD.
Okay.
Friends are like, there's no way that would ever happen. So they, on their own time, retrace Kathy's steps. They show her photo around the city. They dig through the garbage cans out front of the South Salem cottage. They do all, like, literally, I think one girl gets on at midnight on the train and takes the ride all the way down by herself in New York City to see if anybody can find, has seen Kathy at any point.
I've been on a train by myself in New York City at midnight and later.
Is it scary?
Not really. There's not many people on there, so,
yeah.
I mean.
Hobos?
No, not even. They have to pay to get on it, so.
Oh, that makes sense.
Now they have, it used to be, like, rails, like, at Disney.
Right, monorail situation?
Yeah, well, like, the pass-through at the entrance.
Uh-huh.
At the waist, whatever, you have to hit them. Mm-hmm. But now... So people could jump those all the time, but now they make you go through, like, tall, like, completely barred...
Oh, yep.
...turnstile, like, things.
Which they have at the back of Disney, by the way, if you're ever trying to sneak in.
Oh, if you're an employee.
Or sneak out as a cast member, yep. You have to go through those giant...
Yes, I've seen those in, like, the parking lots and
they're
stuff
scary.
Out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So these girls, kicking ass. They dig through the garbage cans from the South Salem cottage. In the garbage cans, they find Kathy's clothes, makeup, and school books... one of her friends says, quote, it was like he knew she wasn't coming back. He just started throwing out all of her shit.
That's weird.
Like, everything.
That's the weird thing that people do, and that's what also gets you caught, is when you start, like, throwing stuff away after, like, a week of someone's missing.
Exactly.
And you're just like, oh, okay, well, I guess she's not coming home.
Yep, she won't need any of this.
Nope.
In the same bag of trash, this is my favorite part. Well, one of my favorite parts. They find a list in Robert's handwriting. The list said, quote, town dump, bridge, dig, boat, other, shovel, car/truck, rent, ?
I'm sorry. Somebody please explain to me how that's a normal list for any human being that lives in New York City. Have.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be for somebody who lives here in Florida, who owns a boat, has trash, has a truck, might need to take those things to the dump.
Exactly.
But...
Why would boat be in there? Why would...
Somebody who lives on the 53rd
or
floor.
Be in there. Yeah, exactly.
No. Mm-hmm.
And he's, again, a billionaire who has somebody who could get rid of anything for him. So, why?
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, her friends and police collaborate, and they speculate that this is a list of places to dump her body.
Okay.
Town dump.
Yep.
Bridge. Dig. Boat. Other? Which, why put that in the middle of a list, first of all?
Burn,
I guess. Shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Car, truck, rent. So, they're thinking that he's either going to throw her in the dump, put her over a bridge, dig her a hole, which, by the way, this is February in New York City, so good luck digging anything.
Oh, yeah. No.
Take her out on a boat, I guess, and dump her in the water somewhere. Shovel, which I don't, I guess. And then car, truck, rent. So rent a car or truck and drive her body somewhere and with the shovel and dig? I don't know. Kathy's diary revealed that in 1976, Robert had forced her to have an abortion. because he didn't want kids. According to Bob, the relationship deteriorated from there. So there's the abortion thing. When police questioned the neighbor in South Salem, he denied ever having a drink with Bob that night. The night that Bob took Kathy to the train to go back into the city.
Okay.
So this is a whole Juan and Bob's story. He says he went home and had a drink with a neighbor and then called Kathy from a payphone. Neighbors like, that absolutely did not happen. another hole that they find is that in the interview statements, they keep finding discrepancies with what he says. Like, on one day, he'll say he called her from a payphone. The next day, he says he called her from the neighbor's house. The next day, he says he called her from home while he was watching the news.
Miss Kelly Seeler would be all over exactly. these discrepancies.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, none of it's matching up.
Yep.
Okay, so basically nothing comes of it. Cops are like, she ran away, and that's all we can give you. Because they had no physical evidence, so, you know, whatever. Susan Berman, a longtime friend of Robert's from his days at UCLA, was a journalist who lived in both L.A. and New York, and she became Robert's unofficial spokesperson amid Kathy's disappearance. So she's a journalist and a friend of Robert's, and okay. is going out and talking to the press saying, Kathy ran away, we're very sorry to hear it, but we don't know what happened to her. Basically clearing Robert's name of all of this. Berman was also the daughter of a very powerful Las Vegas mobster. Like, the highest of the high, like, murdered a whole bunch of people kind of mobster.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And this is possibly why she and Robert got along so easily, because they both came from very wealthy families and very staunch dads and...
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Susan is said to be the voice behind claims that the doorman saw Kathy enter her apartment. My thought process is, and this is actually played out in the end of All Good Things, so spoiler, if you're going to watch it,
okay.
fast forward 15 seconds.
Okay.
Is that Kathy was, quote-unquote, cosplayed, I guess, for lack of a better term, by Susan. She put on a blonde wig, went into the apartment, stayed there overnight, called in the morning the school, and said, I'm sick, I'm not going to be in.
Oh, yeah, that'd be so easy. For anybody, especially in the 70s, I mean, wigs
exactly.
were a thing, and
exactly.
that wouldn't be...
Right. Because Susan had dark, like, jet black hair. Like
right.
Joan Jet Black.
Right.
So, you know. Suspicions against Robert continued to mount, but with little physical evidence and no body, the case went cold. In 1998, nearly 20 years later, the case caught a lucky break when an unrelated arrest for public lewdness, which is my favorite thing.
Ew.
Yeah, some guy was just exposing himself to people and got arrested. And he says, I'll give you incriminating evidence against Robert Durst if you give me a plea bargain.
That's interesting.
Right?
A random just peeing in a park, and he's like...
Exactly. Yep. And he's like, give me a plea deal, and I'll help you arrest one of the world's most notorious people.
Fascinating.
Right? Like, first of all, how did these two know each other? Or how did he know about any of this?
Well... Yeah, I mean, unless he saw it, I guess, happen, but...
I guess, I don't know.
Very...
I mean, that's possible, because he says, he insists that Kathy was murdered at the South Salem cottage. Period. Like, she was definitely killed here, 100%.
And this is the one in Vermont?
The one in, South Salem, New York.
The other...
Mm-hmm, when Kathy disappeared, the house they were staying at.
Oh, yes, in January.
Correct.
Okay.
And this launches a full-scale search of the home, property, and lake formerly belonging to Robert Durst, which, amazingly, up until this point, had never been searched at all.
Wait, no one searched that home?
At all. Not once.
Oh, my God.
After she disappeared. Now, this is the 70s, so cops hadn't gotten their shit together yet.
But that's... that can't...
A woman disappears... Her friends are losing their minds. They're calling the LAPD all day, every day.
The LAPD
saying,
or the NYPD?
Excuse me, the NYPD. all day, every day, saying that our friend was murdered. She's gone. She did not run away. Something happened. Investigate it. And nothing happened. Nobody investigated the house.
How, when you have two residences,
mm-hmm.
or I think that was the right word, and someone's gone missing, the problem is... Is he so rich, nobody cares?
Right. Or is he, does he maybe have money tied into the police department?
Oh, well, that's also potentially it, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the chief of police could be like, commissioner is like, yeah, maybe we don't, like, look into that one too hard.
Yeah, let's not
like,
screw up this family. Yeah. Right, because it's the Durst family.
And sure, and they probably are big donors to the city and everywhere else. So, shady, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a shame that there aren't any, at least one or two cops that are like, or detectives rather, that say, hey, maybe we should take a look at that second property, you know, just to make sure she's not hiding there. Maybe she went there, you know.
Exactly.
And see what's gone on over there. But how, that's just how,
it's mind blowing.
That is mind blowing. That's very
irresponsible?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
Both of those things. Okay. Yes. All of those things. So, they finally search the cottage, but of course, it has been nearly 20 years. Too much time has passed, so pretty much any physical evidence would have been destroyed anyway, and no body was recovered. So, it was somewhat pointless.
Yeah, but I want to see somebody go in there and maybe, like...
Spray some
show
all
how it
over
happened.
Everything.
Well, that
Ooh,
too.
That'd be good.
But then,
oh,
like,
you've been watching too much Cold Justice.
I know I have.
It's I agree, just, though. I would. I would see that.
I would love to just like I hate to say that, but I really like
want to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gotcha. I'm with you.
All right.
Let's do it.
It's probably my
you
favorite
and I,
part
we're gonna
on
break
the
into
show.
The South Salem Cottage and reenact.
And it's so crazy how like. Some people either still live there.
Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Is this the and in the Jinx, the HBO series? You can see. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. This tree line behind Stephanie's house is very The Village, and it's kind of freaking me out.
Yeah, it is kind of like
it's
that.
It's also
isn't it?
Great, but like it's a perfect setting. For
I never
this
thought
right
about
now.
That until you said that.
Sorry,
it's okay.
Yeah,
The Village isn't real, so it's okay.
You're gonna die probably.
No, because we're on the good side of it. Whoever's living back there, they live in the sad world of the monsters.
Got it, yes. Okay.
It's okay. It's a federal offense if you step back there, so don't
really?
Do it.
Really? Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Who owns it?
The city.
Robert Durst?
No. It supplies the water to the city. So, you're welcome.
Now I don't want to go back there.
You can't go back there.
So, about that being sidetracked... Here you go, Emma. This one's for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll get our shit together one day. Today is not that day. yes. This happens in the documentary. The lady who now lives in the South Salem cottage was like, police were showing me places, parts of my house that I had never seen before. Like, which, okay.
Wait. How?
Exactly. I don't know. That's all she says. It doesn't go into detail about it. But somehow, there are areas of her home that she had no idea existed.
Then your house is too big.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You don't need that much money. Give it up to me, please.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 1990s, one of Kathy's friends insisted that the NYPD meet with Susan Berman because, quote, she knew more than she was saying. Susan Berman is the one with the black hair. That
Joan
we think,
Jett.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that we think impersonated Kathy.
Yep.
Around Christmas 2000, Susan Berman was found dead in her L.A. home. She had been shot in the head, strangely, just 1 week before the Westchester County DA was set to interview her. Uh-huh.
Okay.
When cops arrived, they described it as an execution. Her body was found after an anonymous letter was received at the LAPD. The letters simply contained her address and the word cadaver. Yeah, so it's literally an envelope addressed to LAPD. Inside the envelope, it has Susan Berman's address and the word cadaver, and that's it.
That is so creepy.
First of all, nobody describes a dead body as a cadaver, unless you're a medical student or something like that.
Yes,
it's
true.
It's just not something
that
happens.
Not a natural
exactly
vocabulary.
Right. So, very strange. Robert was in Los Angeles around the time of the funeral, but did not attend his best friend's funeral. Yeah.
That's also interesting.
Very, very weird. So he goes into the wind for a little while. He secretly remarried, and he married his longtime off-and-on-again girlfriend, Deborah Chartran, who, fun fact, is still married to him to this day.
Okay.
Yeah. They married in a secret ceremony 2 weeks before Susan's death. After Susan's death, Robert goes into hiding, again, in the wind. Then in September of 2001, as a 13-year-old boy was fishing in Galveston, Texas, he happened upon a headless torso in the rocks. Just midsection of body, and that's it. In the rocks in Galveston Bay. When police arrived on the scene, they quickly found a number of garbage bags containing assorted body parts. No head was found.
Ew.
Okay. So they found arms and legs and, you know, whatever.
Sure.
A viable fingerprint recovered from one of the severed arms was traced back to Morris Black. Morris Black lived in a nearby shared apartment building. His neighbor was a mute, deaf old woman named Dorothy Siner. While searching the building, police found a blood trail leading into Dorothy's apartment. Investigators found it unlikely that a little old woman could be capable of murdering, dismembering, and disposing of an adult man, so they decided to investigate the apartment's occupants a little further. In Dorothy's apartment, detectives found an appointment reminder for the optometrist. The name on the reminder was one Robert Durst.
Interesting.
Stephanie's face is so... she's so confused right now, as I'm sure you all are.
Well, from what I know about the case at all, mm-hmm. or him in general, mm-hmm. it's all very confusing. Because I did watch The uh-huh. Jinx...
Did you?
...a bit when it had come yeah. out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so all over it's the
very,
place
yeah. mm-hmm.
that it's... None of it's really cohesive.
None of it makes sense. Yeah, it's hard to follow.
Which I think makes it the hardest
mm-hmm.
thing to deal with uh-huh. is because, you know, most situations, there's patterns to things.
Right.
And this is just, like,
exactly.
insanity.
Okay, so Robert returns to the apartment dressed as Dorothy Siner, little old lady, fun fact.
Sure.
And he is arrested for the murder of Morris Black. Bail is set at $250,000. This is my actual favorite part. At one point, Robert asks the officer, "What should I do?" And the officer says, "Well, I don't know. Do you have $250,000? And Robert says, "Well, not on me." Which is great. Like, okay. So the officer is super confused, but whatever. Robert calls his wife in New York who, quote, had no idea that he had been living part-time in Galveston. She sends the money and Robert posts bail the next morning. He was scheduled for arraignment on October 16th of 2001, but fails to appear. 7 weeks later, police in Pennsylvania arrest Robert Durst for stealing a hoagie from a Wegmans. Durst had $180,000 in the trunk of his car, but he stole a hoagie from a Wegmans.
Well, he needs that $180 for wherever he's running to. He can't afford that $4
right, yeah.
hoagie sandwich.
I just can't understand. And a part of me thinks that
that's how he's so rich is because he just
he makes no fucking sense, honestly. Stuff. See, and that's what I'm thinking is maybe he was just raised in that lifestyle and so he thinks he can do whatever he wants.
Oh,
And he's gone away with so much this, you know, thus far.
Why not steal a sandwich?
May as well. It's my fucking sandwich, so that's let's take it. Just insanity. In 2003, Robert Durst is put on trial for the murder of Morris Black, and Durst argues that while he did kill and dismember Morris Black, he did so in self-defense.
Wait.
Yeah?
You don't dismember somebody in self-defense.
Right.
You yes. might kill someone in self-defense.
Exactly.
But you don't dismember. That's taking it a whole nother level. Exactly. Of
there's
like,
some kind of sadism behind that.
Yeah. There's just no way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well.
So his claim is that in a struggle over the handgun, he accidentally shot Morris and dismembered his body. I love dismembered his body to avoid his true identity being revealed. And the thing. the thing about it is that on November 13th, 2003, a jury finds Robert Durst not guilty of murder.
I mean, just how?
So, one of the jurors actually went and was interviewed, and she kept saying, she was quoting Robert's lawyer, and he got two very, very good, very prominent lawyers.
Of course.
Right, because money can buy anything.
Sure.
But she kept quoting him saying, we are here to determine whether or not Morris Black was murdered, not what happened to his body after.
Okay, but what happened to his body after says a lot about what happened his murder. To it before.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Because
you don't dismember somebody if you accidentally shoot them with a gun. You call the cops if you accidentally shoot them.
If you're scared for your life, like, you know, you're at home and somebody comes in your home and you shoot them.
Right.
And you kill them. Does a logical, reasonable human being who's not a murderer already dismember that person?
Say, oh, you know what I think I'll do is I think I will
because
take
I'm so
a day,
scared of getting in trouble.
I'm
gonna
go ahead and go down to this hardware store,
right?
Buy a bow saw and chop this person up, and then put him in garbage bags, and then in my free time haul these very heavy bags down to the Galveston Bay.
No, I'm just gonna call 911 and say somebody broke into my house. Yep. I shot them. I think he needs an ambulance.
See, and here's the thing is when he gets to his home, Morris Black is in his home. So this is how he dies, is he goes into his apartment. Morris Black is in the apartment. And according to Robert, there's a struggle over a gun. Morris was claiming that he was about to be evicted, and Robert, you better take me in, or Robert, you better pay me money, or something.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. There was a struggle over a handgun, and he accidentally shot Morris. If you walk into your apartment and there's somebody who's not supposed to be there, call the cops. Like, that's... it's that simple.
That is...
It's just wild.
It is very wild. Yes, I agree.
So, in December of 2010, director Andrew Jarecki releases All Good Things, the film starring Ryan Gosling and Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
And it's a film about Robert Durst's life, which, hilariously to me, the names are changed in it. And it's just very slight changes. So, it's like Catherine becomes Kathleen.
Okay, yeah.
I think Robert becomes David, which is a bigger change, but...
Sure.
Melvin becomes...
But still a boring
exactly,
man's name,
Melvin
anyway.
Becomes Melvern, which is my favorite one.
Melvern.
Who was named Melvern?
Nobody.
It's incredible. So Robert goes to see the film in theaters and immediately calls Andrew Jarecki, the director, to request an interview so that he can, quote, tell it my way. In 2015, The Jinx, the documentary series, airs in a five-part series on HBO. The docuseries is an extended interview featuring friends, family, and Robert himself. During filming, new evidence is uncovered in a handwritten letter given to Susan Berman from Robert. The handwriting in the letter is an exact match to the handwriting found in the anonymous letter to the LAPD. Yeah, the cadaver letter.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's the exact match. Before the final episode of The Jinx airs, Robert was extradited to California, where he is set to stand trial for the murder of Susan Berman in April of 2018, as in next month. Yeah.
That is exciting.
It's freaking wild. Like, first of all, to have gotten away with all of those murders and all that stuff, everything aside from stealing the hoagie from Wegmans, let's not
forget.
So
weird.
Mm-hmm. Like, to get away with all of that, and then to... just kind of blurted out into a live microphone without even realizing.
Well, that's just because he's old.
It's ridiculous. He says he was high on meth.
I find that very hard to believe. But again, there you have it. Another good excuse to say.
Exactly.
But still, even if you were, why would you say that?
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing is that's really incriminating is that his brother Doug actually hired a bodyguard at one point. During the filming of The Jinx, because he was convinced that Robert was coming for him. He was going to go kill him.
I mean, he might have.
Right. But, I mean, this guy has gotten away with
way
too much.
Yeah.
So.
Way too much. Well, yeah. I think that was very good. Thank you. Because,
wild.
You know,
yeah.
I, of course, know bits and pieces about everything, but not the whole shebang.
It's
so that's
crazy.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
I know you were very excited and you did a very good job.
I did a lot of research.
I'm very proud of you.
Thanks.
You did very well.
Yeah. So. Valentine's closer.
Yeah. Maybe we can pet her after.
Yes.
If she'll let us.
Okay.
Sometimes she runs away, but the other ones are laying down over there, so maybe we can pet them. But I guess until next time, and it'll be my turn, so I think I found what I'm going to do. I'm very excited
Ooh,
as well.
Mm-hmm. Very excited.
So we'll okay. see.
All right. Well, we're going to go pet cows now.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.